Station number 16720, Bob Wilson, Reel 7.
Mr. Wilson, Reel 8. What other duties as a Lance Corporal might you have? Were there training duties, drill duties? Were there training duties, drill duties?
Well, see, now you're a Lance Corporal, you had a little section of your own, hadn't you? You know, you had 8 men of your own, you know. Tim Gunn, you were. Eh? You were? Tim Gunn. The most hated man in the British Army, the Lance Corporal, he is. Ask anybody. The most hated by the British Army. And of course, you were showing your authority, you see. You were bragging about it. And I don't suppose I was any different to anybody else. Hey? That there? Lance Corporal. Lance Corporal Wilson, you see. And I don't care who it was, it did exactly the same as I did. Now, my chest was out there, you know. Hey? And of course, you did no body clump duties, did you? Not at all. The only thing you did is saw your section was on parade when it had to be on parade. And that when you're on picket, that's all you had to do. You picked your man, you see. You went, he had your own quarters, mess to go to now. Right? Little bit of, this is where the class distinction comes in. It starts from there, you know. Starts from the Lance Corporal. And he's the biggest snob of the lot. It doesn't matter where you go to, ask anybody. He's the biggest snob of the veterans' corps.
The corporal's mess, Mr. Wilson, how was that organised?
Well, as you know, just for corporals and dance corporals, unless by invitation. Because the corporals could invite the sergeants, but they never did. Or they could invite the officers, which very rarely. It was only when the quarter mess had to do. Organisation. Well, it had what is called, which is voted in, a corporal who became their PMC, which is the president of the mess committee. Now, that PMC is the same in the sergeant's mess. They have a PMC and they have one in the officer's mess. So he's in charge of the running of the corporal's mess and make sure that and of course they have the treasurer as well, the PMC and the treasurer, and between them they run that mess for the time they're in that job, which is for 6 months or a year, whichever. Otherwise it just runs like an ordinary club.
You'd have your own bar, did you?
Oh, yes, yes, I've seen the president of the mess committee. He was the fellow that ordered the booze and arranged the with the corporals if they were going to have a do, like a dance, as you were talking about dancing, see? Corporals mess dance, sergeants mess dance, officers mess dance. He was the fellow that did all the hard work, there's no doubt about it. Of course, there's corporals mess meetings where the council read, hello. Been neglected, say. Well, they used to read the account out and say, like, and if they had any surplus, what would they like to do with it? And spend it, or would they like buy a bottle, you know, get an extra pint in or something? So that's the way it was run. And everything had to be put down on paper. And at the end of each quarter, the orders went in and went to the books to see if anything was written there. And the honorary member, and I think in fairness, was the only man that could go in without being asked, was the regimental sergeant major. But everybody else had to be asked to go in.
And they say, you had your own bar.
Oh, you had your own bar.
Did you eat in the corporal's mess, or
no,
did you eat with men?
No, no.
It was just a social?
Just a social thing. The corporals and Lance Corporal, they ate in the dining room.
The bar staff, were they corporals or were they privates brought in?
The bar staff had a mess caterer, which was one of the corporals. You did that for a job, and of course, this is where your, as you mentioned before, the helpers came in. See, the employer, there was a couple of helpers. Which would be them helpers that come into the corporal's mess where me were up there, had been doing this job for years, and the fathers before them, you see? Been associated with the British Army for years, you see, so nothing new to them.
Were the traditional ceremonies held in the corporal's mess that came up each year?
Well, no, that was very rare. The nearest thing a corporal's mess got was maybe a corporal's mess Christmas party, or a sergeant's mess Christmas party. But the corporal's mess, their functions were few and far between, because they hadn't the money either.
But you contributed so much to the mess.
Oh, yes.
And that would be a weekly sum.
Yes, that was your contribution to the corporal's mess. Because, although you weren't supposed to be, allow it, you could get your pint of beer on the slate, you see. Although you weren't supposed to.
So the mess fee was just went into the general fund for purchasing things, what have you, and then you still had to pay for your own drinks.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
How much would the mess fee be?
Well, it all depends what your slate was, you see. But normally, excuse me.
So you paid some kind of fee to the mess. How often was that?
It's dues, it was called.
Dues.
Well, if I remember rightly, it was about 5 shillings to 7 and 6. I think it was 5 bob, I think the court was missed. About 5 shillings, which was a lot of money, man.
And that was every?
Every quarter.
Then in addition to that, you'd have your normal mess bill for whatever you were
doing. If there was anything, and of course I was saying, like, that's because I've been taking orders, obviously, on that. Sorry. And if there's any breakers or anything like that, you see, you'd done any breakers, that came on your mess bill as well.
Ceremonial duties in India, how often did they occur for special occasions again?
Well, I only did one the time I was in Doolally. Ceremonial duty. Like a guard. Only did one.
Were there any parades, annual parades of any kind? The governor's parade?
Not in Doolally.
No. They were in other stations?
I mean, they celebrate the Queen's birthday in Bombay, but not in Doolally.
When did you leave India?
Well, we heard that we were going to go to the Sudan in February of 1937. Now, this was a peculiar setup. Oh, sorry, pause, please. Let's say this was a peculiar setup because it happened very, very rare in regiment's life. The 1st Battalion was coming home and the 2nd Battalion was going out. So what the arrangements was that the 2nd Battalion and the 1st Battalion would meet at Aden, and so many men would be transferred from the 1 Battalion to another battalion before one moved to India and we moved. Our battalion moved to the Sudan, Khartoum. I've told you the date, February 1937.
Do you remember that journey from India?
It was a typical troopship journey. And then we got on the Sudan train to Khartoum. Rattle, rattle, snap. Corrugated seats again, you see. But we got there. There's one thing, and there were no windows in the train, So if a little bit of a gust of wind came up, you were cold with sand. But we got there.
Were you excited at moving from India to another place?
Was.
Were you excited moving from one place to another?
Yes, because I was seeing a different country, you see. I was looking forward to this. And I was looking forward because I remembered a cartoon from my school days. What happened to the cartoon? You know, who was there? General Gordon was there, wasn't he? I want to see that ship, because that ship's still there, you see. Yes, I was excited.
What was the terrain like that you were moving through in on that train?
Have you ever been around the collieries in this country? You see little shunting engines. Well, that's what we're like. As I told you before, we went 100 miles in from Bombay to Dulali, didn't we? And it took us 24 hours. 100 miles in 24 hours. That's speed, that's 125, that, you know, didn't
And in the Sudan, it was a similar train?
It was exactly the sort of thing. It was a, what we called, well, what was, a troop train. It got there when it got there. And they didn't care about comfort, but mind, tell you what, again, I'm sorry to bring this up, but the officer didn't sit on corrugated seat, you know.
What was your impressions of the Sudan when you arrived?
Oh. And of course we got to Khartoum and the barracks was like any other barracks. We'd come out of the barracks at Bombay and we were moving exactly the same sort of barracks. Well, British Army barracks was always the same. So there was no problem there. There were very little duties to do there. Was that, and in this one I told you about... I haven't told you about this one, no.
The land itself, was it flat, desert, what?
Well, you get... I have a laugh when I see the telly, and you see the desert on the telly, you know. See all these great big sand dunes? Well, you don't see on them at all, you know. Some of the desert that... I walked out. It's terrible. There's more pebbles on the, more stones on the desert than sand. There is dunes, you know, and there is wadis, you see, but not like it's a bit exaggerated on the telly and on the films.
What were you doing then in Khartoum?
What do we do? Paul Daniels. And what does Paul Daniels say? Not a lot. Their main task there, see, there's another, I don't know what we were doing there, African, but we did a picket, which was an ammunition depot about half a mile away from the barracks, into the desert, which you went there at, but that was a 24-hour picket. You had to be there on that duty at 24 hours. It was a cushy number, like, but it was a 24-hour picket, that one, and otherwise, nothing else, really. Because the governor's palace down the road there, he didn't have a guard.
What were the Sudanese like?
Well, I don't think I could trust them. I didn't like them. I didn't like the Sudanese. There was too much of a mixed race about them, you know. Too much of a mixed race.
Were they working again in your camps, in your barracks?
Oh, yes. Yes. I've seen quite a few of them working in the camps. Doing the similar sort of jobs as we were doing in India. Yeah.
So you had one to shave you on a morning?
Not in the Sudan. No. There were, I could never understand that, whether the, I don't know. But we never had the, we had Dobie Wallers, you know. And we had the Tea Waller. The Charlies who had them, but we never had the shaver. What do they call them?
What was the climate like?
The
climate.
Warm and hot. Warm and hot. All depends where the sun was. Rather how the sun was out. The barracks at South of Cardew was a beautiful oasis of green and flowers. Beautiful it was. They used the ration of water for the... I brought that in the boat, I'm sure they did. There's never stopped watering. There was green grass, you know, and the football field was like a billiard field. It was a billiard field. Beautiful ground it was.
Was it too hot at any part of the day to do anything? Did you have to split your training or your work up?
You did your parades from about 7 o'clock in the morning to about 10. And that was it, you see.
And that was the day finished?
Unless you were unlucky.
So at what time would you say your sports come along? That was
in the cool of the evening, you see. In the cool of the evening.
Did you get out into any places for leisure outside the barracks?
Nowhere to go. The cartoon was only a... Well, it's a little governor's palace on the end of the Nile. You know, on the side of the Nile. There's nothing there. I know there's a town of Khartoum, but it's not for the Europeans.
Did you do again any exercises or manoeuvres there?
No.
Out into the countryside?
No.
And how long were you there?
Now, we were in the Sudan, as I said, from February 37, only until October 37. And then we were on our way to China. And we left the Sudan on the 30th of October 1937 to go to China.
Whereabouts in China did you land?
We landed Shanghai.
Again, what were your first impressions?
Amazement. That's what I've got it here, amazement. Because naturally, as we were approaching Shanghai, the flashing lights, the neon lights, and the... a blaze of lights. And it is a blaze of iniquity as well, you know. Shanghai, as we got to know later on. But a marvellous sight from the ship. The Shanghai.
And when you landed, what did you do?
When we landed, we went up to Bubbling Well Road Camp, which is in the heart of Shanghai, just beside the race course, which is well known world over, Shanghai race course. And we were stationed in Bubbling Well Barracks.
What was the accommodation like there?
Again, barracks. There was nothing posh about it, but there was nothing worse about it. It was just barracks, and of course, well, you see, the beauty of it there was, you were next to the town. And there was all sorts of things. If you wanted to go to the ballet, you could go and see the ballet. If you wanted to go to the opera, you could go and see, posh operas. And if you wanted to go to the flicks, you went and saw that. And of course, those days, I don't know whether you can remember them, those days, our pound was worth about $5. And of course, for $1, you go to the pictures, have a meal, and come back with enough to go to the pictures and have a meal. So we were millionaires, you see. That's where, if you ask somebody who's in China, that's how they benefit, the currency exchange. Were laughing.
Why had they sent you there? What was your job?
Of course, we know now the Japanese were on the prowl, weren't they? But the British troops had been going there for years. See, and we were in a place called the International Settlement. Well, in the International Settlement, there was the French, the German, the Italians, the Russians, of course, the British, and the Yanks. So you could see we had a cosmopolitan people there, and we all played against each other. It's sport and everything there. So therefore, it was a lovely place to be in Shanghai, and it was cheap, dirt cheap.
How did you get on with the other nationalities?
Well, we got on very well with everybody but the same people we don't get on with today. Who's that?
The Russians?
No, the Itais. Never got on with them at all. Well, got on with them all right. The Russians, they didn't. They wouldn't associate with the, you know, the Russians. And of course, those days then there was the bonny girls, you know, the white Russians. And they were really bonny girls then. And they were there. Of course, quite a lot of lads got, you know, shacked up with them, you see. So.
Why did you, what was the difficulty with the Italians?
I don't know. Still not friends with them, are we? I don't know. I couldn't tell you.
When you say you didn't get on with them, does that mean you came to fisticuffs with them, or...?
We hated each other on the sports field. Hated each other, that's the thing. There was more crimes committed on the sports field than anywhere else. I don't know what it was. But it was before my time, so I wasn't to blame. That's been... And it's still the same today. Still the same today.
Americans, you'll be meeting them the first time.
They had see, they were double peered to what we were going to see, and that was our envy, you know. That come here, you. That was our envy. They got well peered, and of course, with being in Shanghai, they were laughing, weren't they? They could toss them any more like.
Did you get into any rivalry in the clubs or the pubs or what have you against these foreigners? Counting the Americans as foreigners.
The rivalry we got, I think, was when we went on the skit lollies. Because, you know, that was a rare thing for British, you know. I mean, nine pins, we never heard of it, have we? And the roller skating hall. We used to go roller skating, that was a big, the roller paddle. And then, of course, there was the ice cream, but they were bombastic, they were. They really were. If you had a sausage roll 3 inches, they had a 1 6 inches. And they've always been the same, and you'll never change them. But overall, we got on with them all right. We're all right.
You say the Japanese were about the place, of course. Did you come into contact with them in any way?
Later on. Mm-hmm.
So you were in these barracks, and you say they were like most barracks at the time. Did you have Chinese again working for you?
Yes. Before we go any further, the battalion, as I said, was in Bubbling Well Road. I should have told this before, and I apologise. But the battalion was split up into two, and half of it went to Tinsin. Into UN Road Barracks in Tinsin. I should have told you that before, I'm sorry.
But you were in Shanghai?
But I was in Shanghai.
So, in Shanghai, you say that again, you had the Chinese labour, people that were helping you within the barracks and the unit itself. Did you get on all right with the Chinese? What were they like?
Yeah.
They were suffering a great deal at that time, of course, from the Japanese.
They were suffering a lot from, what can we put it down to? It's a hard life, you know, the ordinary person like myself, you know, just ordinary sitting there, they had a hard life. I think they were put on to, you know. And they did some squalor as well, you know. And that Yangtze River was the filthiest river I've ever seen in life. Stuff dying, floating bodies and floating beasts and all sorts coming down.
Were you close to the river?
Not far.
Within the settlement, how obviously the British would have an area of the settlement.
Oh, yes.
And you were protecting that?
Well, not so much protecting as we were there. We had nothing to do with it. It was just we were there, the French was there, of course, you were off. That was their boundary, and our boundary was next to our boundary. So there was no sort of on Sunday ago. There was guards at night time, pickets at night time, things like that, but nothing undue. Just the normal army routine stuff. And of course, the battalion from Shanghai, the companies from Shanghai, one of the companies, which was our company, Air Company, after about a month, went to Peking. Now that was a weird. Now that was next to the Japanese.
And you were only, did you say, only in Shanghai 1 month?
I was. Air Company. Yeah.
At Peking, what were you doing at Peking?
Peking, well, Peking was a beautiful place. I mean, I'll go back tomorrow if I could. You know, you see these places like the Temple of Heaven and things like that, you know, marvellous places they are, just to look at. But you would do nothing there but what? I don't know. Because there was no ceremonial guard to do. There was guard duties to do, but not ceremonial, which is the big difference, you see. And then, yeah, as I showed you that photograph in the album, that's where you used to go out on, like, outpost duty. Along the perimeter, you see, there used to be little guard points along the perimeter where you and your section went and just stayed there for 3 days until you were relieved. And just across, you know, not very far from here to there, was the Japanese lines, you know, and you could see them.
So this was your first contact with the Japanese?
That was the first time I'd seen a Japanese in my life, other than Simi Street. First time I'd ever seen one.
Did it lead to any problems there with the Japanese at all?
I think they were on the same boat as us. They didn't want to antagonise us, and we didn't want to antagonise. I think they were in the same boat as us, because the war hadn't started, had it?
And you didn't come into contact with them?
We didn't come in any physical contact with them, no.
And you say you don't know what you were guarding or protecting at Peking.
I didn't know where I was guarding in Bombay. I didn't know where I was guarding in Doolally. And the clue in Shanghai. I knew in Khartoum because there was an ammunition dump there. Tradition? Because that's where the Boxer Rebellion started, you see.
Could you... How did you fill in your leisure time in Peking? Could you get out?
Oh, yes, we could go allowed out there. And Peking was a place that had, for the dancers, dance halls and things like that, you see, and for cinemas. Cinemas was in Chinese or Russian, but with English subtitles, you see. Oh, the thing to do, and there's plenty to do inside barracks as well. But you could go out if you wanted to.
Were you still a Lance Corporal?
Pardon?
Were you still a Lance Corporal?
Oh, aye, yes. My turn hadn't come round yet. Yeah.
Were there any ceremonial parades in Peking?
No, not in Peking.
Did you get no visits from higher people?
Well, the officers, you know, the CEO got officers, but there was never a turnout for the governor or anything like that, you know. There were no red carpets or any touchdown, no.
Was the weapons changing at all? You're now into about 1938, I think.
Well, the Bren guns, then, you think?
You've got your Brens now.
And that's when they first started coming out.
Mm-hmm. Were you doing any training of the normal red battalion type in Peking, China? Drill?
You mean Italian? Battalion manoeuvres? No.
But the climate, again, was the climate... was it okay?
Well, the climate was... was bearable. There could be lovely days, you know, but there was always the damp air about it. But it was a lovely climate at times. I could, if it wasn't for the Chinese, I could live there. but the river got me down, but the climate, as you asked about, was quite okay, yeah.
Was there a winter, which was much colder than summer?
Oh, yes, yeah. Snow, When you went on picket duties, you had the old Russian, you know, fur hats on and fur coats. Yeah.